All right, our next speaker is Dr. Leighton Smith. Dr. Smith received his PhD in pharmacology from Vanderbilt. He then conducted his postdoctoral training in clinical pharmacology and cardiovascular medicine also here at Vanderbilt. In 2005, Dr. Smith joined the Scripps Research Institute in Jupiter, Florida as Associate Director of Pharmacology. There he played an integral role in the establishment of the Small Molecule Discovery Program, providing in vitro and in vivo pharmacology support to 5 drug discovery programs. Dr. Smith is currently Assistant Professor and Director of Pharmacology at Sanford Burnham Medical Research Institute. In addition to the research program in his lab, Dr. Smith was recently appointed to Director of Drug Discovery Florida, overseeing the drug discovery efforts of the Conrad Priebus Center for Chemical Genomics at the Orlando Research Site of Sanford Burnham. His lab is focused on identifying molecular mechanisms of increased risk for cardiovascular disease and the metabolic syndrome, a cluster of risk factors including insulin resistance, hypertension, and obesity. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Smith back to Vanderbilt.
Thank you, Lane. Today I'm going to tell you a little bit about life in an independent research institute. And many of the things that I had eliminated from my talk are very much what Dr. Lee has just told you about how to get into an alternative career. I don't necessarily see my career as truly alternative, just perhaps more complicated. So in an homage to a little bit of academia and a little bit of industry, I've got a little bit of a referral to country music in my title. Maybe the Osmond twins will forgive me for that. So what is Sanford Burnham? Well, Sanford Burnham is your prototypical independent research institute. Independent research institutes in the United States, there are roughly 100, and you can see from this map that they're scattered throughout the United States, but predominantly exist in the New England Northeast Corridor in California. And in fact, that one Soul Green pin in Florida is not our site in Florida. That's the Moffitt Cancer Institute in Tampa, but because we have a locations in both La Jolla and Florida, we only get one green pin. I'm a little jealous of the green pin. I'm sorry. So again, what is Sanford Burnham and how is it different than a typical institute like Vanderbilt or any other academic or medical center? Well, first of all, we're much younger. We were founded in 1976 with the sole purpose of performing cancer-focused research. We have 81 full-time faculty located at 3 separate institutional campuses. I think that's the way people say it now. The nuns would kill me for not saying Camp I. But we have facilities in both La Jolla, Santa Barbara, and most recently in Lake Nona, which is a suburb of Orlando. Our annual operating budget is $154 million. And so you can imagine with comparing this facility to this campus here, we are much smaller, both in the number of people and in the budget and the operating structure that we have. However, we have a tremendous amount of lab space, and I'll get to the reason why we have more than 500,000 and growing square feet in lab space, even though we have such a small number of investigators. We publish about 300 papers a year out of the Institute, and we have over 550 patents issued. Just in this year alone, we've filed over 50 provisional patent applications. These are some of the reasons why Sanford Burnham is the fastest growing independent research institute in the U.S. And since 2000, our NIH grant funding has increased by 60%. We're the only institute that has actually experienced an increase in NIH funding during a flat period. So why do I tell you all of this? It's because I'm trying to give you an idea of what makes Sanford Burnham as the prototypical independent research institute different than an academic or medical center. Our primary difference is that our sole focus is medical research. We do not grant degrees, so there's no educational component. We don't have a hospital, so we don't have clinical duties. Some investigators at Sanford Burnham conduct 100% of their effort to thinking about the scientific question that they are most interested in answering. As you can see from this sort of rosette here, we have 5 centers focusing on disease areas. So again, our focus is medical research, and thus we are organized thematically. So we have a cancer center. We don't have a department of medicine. We have a Diabetes and Obesity Research Center. We have an Infectious Inflammatory Disease Research Center, a Children's Health Center, and a Neuroscience and Stem Cells and Aging Center. And the way we've organized ourselves at this institute is very common outside of an academic medical center and allows us to be grouped thematically rather than by discipline. And this allows us to create very nimble teams to approach different difficult scientific questions and apply for new types of funding to create new hypotheses and bring new technologies to bear to address these questions. As our tagline is on all of our notes, it's from research, the power of the cure. So our key focus is simply to find the scientific discoveries that lead to new therapies. And we've organized ourselves in a way to simply deliver on that. In addition to our thematic areas of research, we have extensive technology infrastructure. You can see here a smattering of the core services that we have, and they're very similar to what you would expect to find here at Vanderbilt. We have everything from an animal care facility to a genomics analysis. We have proteomics, all of the various omics aspects of things, but we have them organized in a way in which they are service providers to the various different investigators or program project or multidisciplinary grants. So it is these shared resources overlaid on top of our organizational structure, which is thematic and its disease focus, that allows us to create multidisciplinary teams. Using a team science approach, we design our research strategies and goals to address very complex scientific problems involving the skill sets of biologists, pharmacologists, chemists, hematopoieticians, and engineers as well in some case. And our goal is paradigm-shifting studies. I mean, this is crazy. When someone shows up to you and says, hey, what I want you to do is change the way people think about cancer and how we approach cancer, it's not an incremental next step that becomes logically apparent to everybody who thinks about it. Somebody is asking you to create a new thought process. And it's not something you can do sitting in a lab with your team. It rather requires input from a variety of different resources, and perhaps most importantly, the creative synergy that comes from different disciplinary approaches to solving scientific questions. In fact, this has been a successful strategy because 60% of all of the grants that we have funded at Sanford Burnham are multidisciplinary, involving multiple PPGs addressing prostate cancer to neuroblastomas. We have program project grants looking at the interaction between fat tissue and cardiovascular tissue, as well as the tumor microenvironment and the development of diabetes and the approach to metabolism by cancer cells. We have a large grant called the Neuroscience Blueprint. We have a Center of Nanomedicine, and something I'll talk a little bit more about are the MLPCN and CBCs, which is a bunch of alphabet soup from the NIH to talk about academic drug discovery. It's worth noting that the MLPCN grant that was awarded to Sanford Burnham is the largest NIH grant ever awarded to a single institute in history, and it was almost $100 million. So as I started my talk out, I wanted to tell you a little bit about Sanford Burnham as a prototypical independent research institute. But you can see that the career path would not necessarily be all that different from working at an academic institution like Vanderbilt. You would execute your postdoc, find a faculty track position, and apply for grants. What makes this a slightly more complex or alternative career is the role that Sanford Burnham has decided to play in academic drug discovery. So we truly are a little bit academia and a little bit industry. Our drug discovery unit is the Conrad Prebys Centers for Chemical Genomics and includes four main units: assay development, which is where we create novel cell-based assays or biochemical assays suitable for high-throughput screening. And the whole purpose of this high-throughput screening is to identify novel targets and therapies for mostly orphan diseases. We're not out to generate the next statin or the next blood pressure lowering medication. We're actually looking for novel pathways to deal with some of the more complicated medical issues that face us today. As everyone says, the low-hanging fruit has been picked, and this is our approach to figure out how to get to the higher oranges. I say oranges because we're in Florida. So we have HTS, which is all of the robots, and I'm going to try and show you a bit of a movie with that so that you can understand some of the excitement of the work that we have going on and why it takes a team of roughly 50 people to get a single project up and running. Now, is that showing up over there? Now, if I can start it. This is why we were late. The movie didn't want to run the way we wanted it to do. So this looks very much like a typical automobile assembly plant with giant yellow arms moving lots of little bits and pieces. But what we're really doing is conducting 1,536 experiments in one of the microtiter plates that you see there. This is not at all possible to do in your own lab. We have roughly 11 people whose sole job every day is to make sure that robot runs appropriately. We've got another 30 people whose job is to continue to feed that robot with compound libraries, cells, recombinant protein, etc. So we're beginning to see why we can't do this kind of research in a RO1-driven investigator lab. This thing goes on for a little while longer, but I wanted to give you just simply a flavor of the complexity of the types of questions that we are equipped to answer at Sanford Burnham with this particular infrastructure. Now, I'm sure I've just messed up the slideshow. And I'll try to pick this up and get it out of the way. So we are one of four national probe discovery resources, which is the MLPCN. And as a result of this infrastructure, we are positioned to actually bring to discover the next great medicines. So now that I've given you a bit of a flavor of what is going on at Burnham and how it would compare, I want to talk to you a little bit about the niche market that we're looking to address, essentially, with our research. And that is the early discovery standpoints. Oh, it didn't change. That's because I've messed the whole thing up. There we go. So as you can see, this is the typical drug discovery pipeline here with early discovery that I'm circling with the pointer and all the way to full development. One of our initiatives is an NCI-funded drug discovery initiative called the CBC, or the Chemical Biology Consortium. And what we've decided to do at Sanford Burnham is to leverage the resources that you saw in that video for novel target identification, hit finding, and lead optimization. The purpose of this NCI-supported project is to create a pipeline for future drug discovery. The goals that we have in mind are to continue to conduct paradigm-shifting research simply by leveraging the technologies that we have. How do we do this different than what's been done at every big pharmaceutical company that you can think of? Well, you remember we're organized thematically. Well, we have a lot of people whose sole job every day is to think only about their favorite disease. Stuart Lipton, for example, is a world leader in neurodegeneration, and he's very interested in natural products to prevent the death of neuronal cells, particularly in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Well, Stuart isn't equipped to do high-throughput drug screening, but he is the expert in this particular field of research. So we team with Stuart. We create phenotypic screens from induced pluripotent stem cells from patients in his clinic, and then we put these iPS cells, grow them up, and recapitulate the disease in a dish. This particular example allows us to probe what's going wrong in the cells from the individual patient rather than simply creating an artificial reporter system like a luciferase gene reporter or a cultured HEK293 cell that's been passed down so many generations in the test tube that it doesn't actually reflect the function of an embryonic kidney cell. And this allows us to be positioned perfectly at the very front of that particular paradigm that you see here. Now, one of the challenges about working in this is that we are small. We have a lot to do, and we have to herd a lot of different cats, be they the individual scientists who are experts in the field, or be they individuals like me whose job is to herd more cats than there are instrumentation and lassos to herd, or work with the NCI and the NIH to do these large collaborative research grants. So officially, I have two jobs. The reality is I probably have six jobs, but they're only paying me for two, and they're not paying me enough. The first is that I have a classic assistant professor job. It is the same kind of job that you have been trained to do your entire time during graduate school. There's a singular research focus with hypothesis and data-driven outcomes, and the primary funding mechanism is an R01. The outcome measure for success is publications. So I'm not going to tell you how to go out and get that job. You know how to do that. The other job I have is the director of drug discovery, which means I collaborate with about 56 other people on 66 projects that are milestone-driven. Nobody cares whether it's my favorite protein or whether I really like this very interesting side project. They want to know how many compounds we screened, how many of those compounds are functional in the biochemical assay, how many are functional in the cell-based assay, are they toxic, do they have exposure in a mouse? You know, they're very, very rigorous, predetermined goals for each of these particular steps. It's also mixed funding. We have partnerships with industry, we have partnerships with the NIH, and we also have some philanthropy dollars that come to us to support specific disease-targeted screening approaches. You've got to manage those types of people as well as your grants officers and your various review panels. The outcome measures are quite different. What we are measured in is not what we publish, but rather the number of lead compounds that are delivered and the number of milestones achieved. So how do you go about getting that particular job? Well, I think the things that Dr. Lee touched on were very important. Obviously, networking. But one of the things that you absolutely have to do is learn a large, complicated project management skill. Right now, it's very easy to manage your day-to-day bench work. I'm going to prioritize this experiment. I'm going to make a timeline as a result of this. But now, even with these robots, we have to schedule and consider what 50 individual people are doing. And it's a linear portion in some cases and a parallel portion in another case. So anything that you can do to increase your exposure to collaborative efforts, working with the lab down the hall where they're going to do a particular experiment for you in exchange for being listed on your publication, or reaching out to a collaborator, even at an institution across the United States to put something together, will really begin to teach you the kind of management skills that you'll have to manage 66 projects. Whether you manage them well or not, I can't say, because I don't know if I do a good job or not, but that's how many I have to manage. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that there's a lot of people that ask me questions about how I separate my two jobs. Well, the reality is that I've got a list here of myths and facts. And everybody, although they pay me 50% effort as an assistant professor, 50% effort as a director of drug discovery, the fact is every scenario like this in a hybrid organization, like Sanford Burnham, or in a traditional organization like Vanderbilt, is a 100-100 effort job. It is what it is. It's challenging, but it's exciting. You got to see the robot that I get to play with every day, and I get to be involved in 66 different projects from PIs all over the United States. But plus, I have my own academic lab that feeds into the screening center that allows me to scratch the need for discovery that really drives my scientific interest. We don't have tenure at Sanford Burnham, and as far as I could tell from all of the research institutes people would talk to me about this particular subject is there is no such thing as tenure at them. I generate the income that pays my salary and the salary of my staff by grants, and by extension by participating in these larger collaborative efforts like the MLPCN and the CBC. A lot of people anticipate that because I have lots of titles I get more money. Well, I only get a little bit more money. Anywhere from 10 to 15% over the average academic salary is within expectations. To put that in context for an industry position that I have, similar to what I have, would be about a 25% bump up in salary. This is, of course, prior to the recent layoffs in industry, and also a very focused job. You often don't have the opportunity to do a lot of different things in industry, and that's one of the hybrid aspects of an independent research institute. You do maintain the the academic inquisitiveness, but you also have a little bit of the project management that is required to bring these large projects to fruition. There are less duties and responsibilities is one thought, and that is because you don't have to handle a clinic or educate individuals. Well, the reality is there's probably more responsibilities. I said I had two plus jobs. I was the chair of the IACUC. I was part of the vivarium planning team. I had to become an engineer to know how those robots were going to fit in the door. And I think I had to become a contractor and literally remove a window at one point. But that's not how it went out very well, I don't believe. One of the things that I like to say is that bigger is not necessarily better. In fact, smaller is faster. My academic lab is only about five people, and that allows us to be very nimble, and we can ask questions and leverage the technology resources virtually instantaneously. I don't have to have somebody who is a histology expert at my beck and call all the time and pay their salary. I just simply send the slides down the hall, and I get data back in a digital format and analyze it. Similar with the high-throughput screening, as we go through the structure-activity relationships with the compounds, the chemists are doing their job to improve the compound. We're doing our job to test it. I don't have to go out and learn how to be a chemist. One of the concerns that I'd like to mention in the last 15 seconds of my time is that because science is different, it's becoming more team-oriented, more interdisciplinary, the funding must also be different. And this is not to put a negative spin on it, but the reality is science is different, but the NIH is not. It's very challenging as a junior investigator in the eyes of the NIH to get R01 funding to do chemical biology and drug discovery projects. I think that's changing, but it just goes to show that one of the challenges that one would face in this particular hybrid career would be selling your science as something that will benefit the scientific community as a whole. That was the timer, so I'll just mention that an unconventional career path is fairly risky, even if you're working with outstanding individuals. And so, as Dr. Lee mentioned, if you're considering an alternative career path in science, but you still want to have a hybrid link like I've got, one has to accept the fact that the pathway to independence that is generally put forth of postdoc, research instructor, staff scientist, assistant professor, associate, et cetera, is not likely going to occur on the same timeline and in the same context that you might have started out with. And finally, the myth is that we have cool toys, and the reality is that we have very, very cool toys. So I hope that in this 21 and a half minutes, I've given you a flavor of what life is like in an independent academic research institute and reiterated some of the lessons that Dr. Lee mentioned and I'm sure you've heard before and Lisanne will mention about networking and also finding your niche that works. This particular position works for me and others will find other positions that work for them, and that's the importance of a career symposium like this. So I'll be glad to take any questions after Dr. Parker talks.